activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Wednesday, March 5th, 2014. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 99. One away from triple digits. Held over in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Dave Dean Nelsim Nelson. Joining me, as always, Brad Boyd Leswis Ludwig from Wausau, Wisconsin, and Anessa Alana Magnus Moines from Denton, Texas. Good evening, lady and gentleman.
Magnus.
We've been Travolta-sized.
Yes.
Bam!
Coming off the crazy, weird pronunciation of what's-her-face at the Oscars.
Idina Menzel?
Yeah, I don't even know. I'd never heard her name before the Oscars, so I'm having a hard time remembering her name, her actual real name. I know that Travolta mispronounced it, but I didn't know what it was to begin with. So
I didn't realize that she was on the cast of. I wanted to say Bewitched. It's Wicked. It has witches in it. It's similar.
That's right.
Wicked?
Wicked.
Yeah, apparently she was Elphaba, wasn't she?
I believe so.
Wait a second. What is Wicked? I've never heard of it.
Oh, Wicked is, it was a book.
It
was the tale of basically the, and I haven't read it yet, but from the back cover, the Wicked Witch of the West and like Glinda and the witches go to a school and they're
okay. Yeah, I know.
It's like their younger years.
Yeah,
it's actually, well, I haven't read the book, but I did see the musical in Dallas, and it was really good. I highly recommend it.
So she's on the cast of the book.
It got turned into a Broadway musical.
But she was in the what?
She was in the cast of the musical that was based on the book.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, I was confused for a second. All right, so this is the Alien Invasion, the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, the TV shows, the video games, the comic books, the science,
the internets,
and in real life. The show is divided into three sections: the news, the creature feature. That's the ditzy. See, I'm sounding like Travolta now. Ditz. That's the spotlight of a certain alien in science fiction or fact. That's my.
That totally sounds something like Travolta.
I thought you were going to ask me if I wanted some Tranyak there for a second. It almost sounds like that voice from the classic Star Trek episode.
Oh.
Would you like some Tranyak?
Which episode was that from? I don't even know.
I don't remember.
What did he say? How did he introduce her? The wonderful, spectacular, and...
Tranya was the name of it. It's the orange-pink-colored beverage originating from the First Federation.
What the hell is the First Federation?
They're the ones that stopped... it's from the Corbomite maneuver, and that's where they stopped the Klingons. I think it was the Klingons and
I'm being schooled here. I should know this. I'm a big Trekkie. Apparently not a big enough Trekkie. Corbomite.
The child actor was Ron Howard's brother.
Oh, okay,
Clint.
That episode. Okay, yeah.
Yep. And, they make first contact with the First Federation, and things kind of got weird.
Okay, that's cool. All right, so going back to what I was trying to say, the news, creature feature, and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us live, we do the show normally on Thursday nights, doing it a little bit early this week, a day early on Wednesday. But follow us on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, or all the details at galacticnetcasts.com. So let's get into it here with the first thing, which is this.
In the news.
And, Anessa, I'm really glad that you picked this story for yours, because it's a fairly recent story, last couple of days, and it's very interesting. So tell us all about it.
So NASA is hoping to launch a mission to the Jupiter moon Europa, because they say that it's perhaps the solar system's best bet to host alien life. And they're hoping to launch this mission in about 10 or so years from now. And they made this announcement on Tuesday, so yesterday, March 4th. The White House's 2015 federal budget request, which was released Tuesday, allocates $15 million to help develop a mission to Europa, which harbors a potentially life-supporting ocean of liquid water beneath its icy shell. Europa is a very challenging mission operating in a really high radiation environment, and there's lots to do to prepare for it, NASA Chief Financial Officer Beth Robinson told reporters on Tuesday. We're looking for a launch sometime in the mid-2020s. The $15 million, which represents a tiny fraction of the $17.5 billion allocated to the space agency in the 2015 request, would fund very early pre-formulation work for a potential Europa mission, Robinson added. I know people have asked about the total size of the possible mission, and we're frankly not sure at this point, she said, adding that the agency officials will reach out to the scientific community to help map the mission. Those statements by Robinson and other NASA officials suggest that the Europa mission space is wide open at this point. The best candidate to get off the ground in 2025 or so may be a concept called the Europa Clipper. NASA researchers have been developing the Europa Clipper idea for years. The probe would orbit Jupiter but make dozens of flybys of Europa using a variety of science instruments to study the moon's ice shell and subsurface ocean. The Europa Clipper would conceivably cruise through the plumes of water vapor erupting from the moon's south pole, intriguing features that were discovered late last year and have helped build momentum for a Europa mission, since they offer a possible way to sample the ocean from afar. It would probably cost around $2 billion to get the Europa Clipper off the ground, officials have estimated. That's a pretty high price tag in these tough fiscal times, so some rethinking may need to be required to take the Clipper, or something like it, from concept to reality. The Europa Clipper is what we would call a flagship, and right now the budget horizon is such that we're deferring that kind of mission until later in the decade, Jim Green, head of NASA's Planetary Science Division, said in December at the annual fall meeting of the American Geophysical Union in San Francisco. So
I read a story today, didn't really read it, just saw the headline, that the mission would be under $1 billion. So maybe they've already decided that that's too spendy.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a lot of ideas going about, and they're trying to figure out ways to launch this project, get it into space, and actually have it operate and succeed, hopefully. Fingers crossed. I've heard... I saw a couple of other articles that estimated that it would probably run somewhere close to the cost of the Mars rover mission, but I'm not quite sure how much the Mars rover mission cost. But that was one idea that they had as far as potential monies that would be needed.
And of course, the budget has to be approved by Congress too, so that's... a hurdle they have to jump over.
Yeah, I Googled Mars rover cost. I think they were aiming for Curiosity, but Spirit rover cost $40 million. Rover cost.
You know, in the scheme of things, though, that's still way, way, way below a lot of things in the U.S. government budget. Like, NASA's got, like, this teeny bit of this huge... Okay, for the audio listeners, I'm using my fingers and my hands to represent how small the NASA budget as compared to the whole budget. I mean, defense is just gigantic next to NASA's small, small budget.
Yeah, and I believe Curiosity was $2.5 billion, or at least so far. I'm not entirely sure.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to watch this story develop, you know. But we already know what's on the surface or underneath the ice on Europa. It's a bunch of aliens trying to kill us, as we've learned from movies such as The Europa Report. They didn't come back alive.
Well, we're just making science fiction a reality, so.
Okay. No, that's very interesting. That's been a prime target in the solar system for years and years and years, because it's got the best possibility for life in the solar system.
So far, yeah, it does, most definitely. Because it's amazing what can actually survive in extreme conditions, as we found here on Earth. So why not have something similar on Europa?
Extremophiles.
Even if it's like microorganisms. So
they're called extremophiles.
They are called extremophiles.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Great story. Awesome. I'm glad that you brought this to us today, Anessa. I was hoping somebody would bring this, because I already had my story, and then Brad already had his story. When this story
broke. And then
broke.
I Googled this story 30 minutes before the show.
Yeah. So maybe this is an example of a good thing that you should wait until the last minute to put your story in the document.
Sometimes procrastination pays.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. A bit of a toss-up.
For example, so. Brad not having a pick until the exact minute or second where he had to have a pick. Remember that, Brad?
Yep. That was me.
Actually, I had my pick and my creature feature before I had my story, so.
Yeah, all right.
Usually it's the other way around.
All right, let's move on to Brad's story. Something from fiction. Let's go from fact to fiction.
Absolutely. So a number of scientists were asked what mistakes or what blunders do people make when they invent fictional worlds that support life? Or worlds in general. And some of the answers that they were given were kind of interesting. Not so much the answers, but kind of, you know, if you were to boil it down to a snippet of what it is, just the full thought behind the answers is really kind of cool. So item number one, and this comes from Andrew Fracknoy, chair of the astronomy department at Foothill College in Los Altos Hills, California. And he says, given the amazing variety of exoplanets we've been finding out there, the remarkable range of orbital and physical characteristics they seem to have, writers and creators really kind of need to take note of what we're seeing out there, of things that could possibly support life. The diversity of exoplanets is apparently so great that nearly any rendering in science fiction could occur in cosmic nature. And this is from Jeff Marcy, professor of astronomy at UC Berkeley, who's credited himself for discovering 70 out of the first 100 exoplanets that we've ever found. In fact, the best candidates for supporting life at the moment appear to be tidally, excuse me, tidally locked planets orbiting red dwarfs. And this is from Seth Shostak, senior astronomer in the with SETI Institute. And if you have biology on planets around such stars, it will be mostly confined to a thin strip along the Terminator. That sounds like an Arnold thing.
The Terminator? He's going to kill you or save you from the
That
other
would
one.
Be interesting, of course, and quite unlike most planets you see in films. The second thing is picking the wrong star. This is from Stanford University physics professor Bruce A. McIntosh. And he says a good example is Epsilon Eridani. I knew I was going to trip over that one. It's got a good name, and it's kind of a popular choice, but it's way too young of a star to have a planet orbiting it that's really habitable. They believe that the star is only 500 million years old, and that's far too young to have really built up any kind of ecosystem that that could support an oxygen atmosphere and thus would support life. The other thing, too, is a lot of alien planets seem to have more land than water. So for a long time, most alien planets used to look like the landscapes around Los Angeles for obvious reasons. But that really is no longer the case based on the studies that they've been doing of exoplanets. And they see a lot of these planets have a great deal of water. The Earth may be very rare in one attribute that few people realize. The Earth has 0.03 of its mass in ocean water. Without continents, the development of technology would be slowed and compromised, if not impossible. How can an intelligent species invent fire, the printing press, or iPhones on a water world? It seems very difficult. You know, the other thing that happens, too, is planets are put too close together. And we're going to wrap it up with this one here. So in some cases, planets in science fiction, they're very close together, but the problem comes in it's orbiting a star. And over time, if they're orbiting too close together, they're going to hit each other. So there has to be some amount of distance between the planets for everything to work and not destroy all of life on a planet that it may actually take hold on because all the planets are way too close. If you want to see the rest of this article, and it's very interesting, it's on IO9, and we'll have it listed. Science of alien worlds, I think, is going to kind of up and or change how alien worlds are approached in fiction. So I think it'll be very interesting.
I want to see
the more we learn.
I want to see more of the non-desert planets, as you were talking about. Because I think the desert planet has been done to death. I mean, just count them off. You had Tatooine from Star Wars. You had Dune was all desert, right?
Yep.
You had that desert planet from Star Trek V. Terrible movie, but there was a desert involved in that.
There's a desert planet in Doctor Who.
John Carter stories were all that's all desert planet. So I say more ocean planet, more like greenish, a lot of lush greens. You know, because greens are good for your diet, right? So. Let's get some greens back in our science fiction.
Absolutely.
Like, I was thinking about what this Seth Shostak said about in the section not being weird enough, but I was really confused about the area where it says, if you have biology on planets around such stars, it will most likely be confined to a thin strip along the Terminator. Does that mean that the Terminator doesn't move, which doesn't really make sense to me?
Can you first, can you explain what the Terminator is? Because I don't know what it is.
Basically, the Terminator is the line that separates the light side from the dark side. So if you're looking at the moon and you see a crescent, it's at the edge of that crescent that it separates, like I said, the light from the dark. And so the Terminator, while not like completely dark, it's going to have like a little bit of light, but it's always going to move as your position around the sun moves and your planet rotates.
But I think he wasn't he talking about the tidally locked planets when it came to that?
Maybe.
No.
I don't remember him specifying tidally locked.
Okay.
Yes. No, that was in the not weird.
Yeah, it says appear to be tidally locked planets, but it just I don't know. Even then. I guess maybe.
So the lesson here is before you make a fictitious planet in your science fiction movie, game, book, comic book, whatever, you should consult with science.
I guess it makes sense. If it's tidally locked around the sun, then yeah, you would have one side always facing and then you would have the other side always cold. So yeah, it would be the Terminator.
Just like
but I was picturing more for some reason like a satellite orbiting the moon, and then even though it's tidally locked with us, it still gets different faces, like it still faces the sun like all the way around, just not at the same time.
Okay.
So
all right. Cool. All right. So what's your takeaway, both you guys, from this article? What should we do for this to not ever happen again in science fiction?
You know, I guess having the writers do their homework,
yeah,
and taking a look into this a little bit more, especially now that we've cataloged, like, we're at over 1,000 now. 715 were just discovered, so we've got a lot of things that we can draw from, and now they're starting to do from our last episode, they're starting to do spectrographic analysis of the larger planets, not Earth size, but the near Jupiter size. And do the homework.
Yeah, I think you got plenty to choose from and more all the time. So I'd like to see a science fiction story based around a planet that we actually have found. That'd be kind of cool.
No, it would be cool. Vanessa,
what's your takeaway on this?
Apparently, we need more weird movies. Christ, I can't think of that one movie that we watched. It was a Russian movie where it was like this planet that was primarily water. Brad, do you remember? I think you fell asleep through it.
Yeah. Probably.
It was really long, and it was like this mission went to this planet that was primarily made of water, but like this planet had this psychic ability.
That was Sunshine. Wasn't that Sunshine?
No, I don't think it was Sunshine.
Because it was there. Because that was a Russian film before we got our hands. Before Hollywood got its hands on it.
Oh yeah. Crap. Yeah.
Yeah, it ended up being remade, but I don't think it. Was called Sunshine?
Oh, so it was called Solaris.
Solaris.
Yeah.
We watched the original Solaris.
So apparently we need more Solaris-type planets.
I do that a lot.
What was Sunshine? Wasn't Sunshine a movie, too?
Of a Spotless Mind? I don't know. Probably.
That they went, they went to the sun. I swear to God, that was a movie too.
No, you're absolutely right. It was 2007. It was a British sci-fi adventure thriller created by Danny Doyle.
Okay. What was the plot?
And it's about a crew of a spacecraft on a dangerous mission to the sun.
Ah, I knew it. So I got that and Solaris confused.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. What?
Let me get the plot summary here.
Are you getting this off IMDb?
Yep. In the year 2050, dark energy is destabilizing the sun, threatening all life on Earth. scientists conclude that an experimental stellar bomb payload... And spoilers, so we're done.
Stellar bomb. I think we can leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
That totally sounds made up.
And looking at some of the reviews here.
that's like the red...
No.
From Star Trek, the 2009 Star Trek movie, Red... what was it? The red matter? Red matter, yeah.
No, actually, Sunshine got a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb. So.
I'm sorry. Okay, let's move on.
See, we can't do that to Dave.
See, I've got the control. You get your own.
Just
soundboards.
You wait, Henry Higgins. Just you wait.
Oh my God.
Soon we'll have own audio equipment, and then we can. Totally do that.
You know what I have to say to that?
Oh, no!
Yep.
I was like, just you wait, Henry Higgins.
Yes, I'm looking forward.
Ellen!
I'm looking forward to you guys having your own advanced audio equipment. This is going to be fun. And then we can have Battle of the Soundboards. Yeah!
Oh, boy.
All right, so let's wrap up the news with a very cool story, and I'm so glad... You know, I'm so glad that I found this, and I'm so glad that I found it, like, right away, right off the bat. Like, this is the first story that came up when I Googled alien invasion this week. This is a freaking cool story. So, alien invasion to launch in April, but the UFOs will be glowing drones piloted by hoaxers. On an April evening this year, swarms of glowing spacecraft will be hovering over locations around the world. The goal is maximum panic and to cause an apocalypse in the media. But the pilots won't be little green men, but UFO fans using drone aircraft. This is something that you and I, Brad, talked about a long time ago about doing. We never got around to doing it. But I don't think it was drone aircraft. I think it was balloons. We had an idea to use balloons. Just to see what, you know, if it would be reported in the news. And this has the potential of causing being a corruptive endeavor here. So dozens of volunteers around the world have signed up for what may be the biggest prank in history. The aliens' craft will be strips of LED lights on remote-controlled multi-rotor drone aircraft. Nigel Watson, author of the Haynes UFO Investigations Manual, found plans to cause a wave of UFO sightings around the world on forums frequented by drone fans. Watson says the big UFO project was originally scheduled for April Fool's Day, but they changed it to the 5th of April, so that it will not be seen as an obvious hoax. The plan is to launch the craft at 8 p.m. local time. So 8 p.m. wherever you are in the world, you'll launch your drone craft with the LED lights, and that's for maximum impact. It'll be dark enough, and there'll be enough people out and about to check it out around 8 o'clock that day. Let's see what else. Watson says the craft are already scheduled to launch in the U.S., U.K., France, South Africa, and the Netherlands, but that more official and unofficial people are expected to join the project on launch date. So this is cool. This is disruptive. I like disruptive stuff. How do you guys feel about this? It's a good thing? Is it making light of actual UFO sightings?
Now, here's the thing. What if there was an actual alien invasion on April Fool's Day and everybody thought it was a prank because of these guys?
I know.
And then we were totally screwed because we were not prepared.
Or, you know, any time afterward, because we'll be like, oh, it's those pranksters again.
They're at it again with their shenanigans.
Or maybe this is a conspiracy to help, you know, hide
the
fact
conspiracy.
That there's aliens. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. They have not been in the news for a while, so maybe this is their way of sneaking back in.
That's right.
right.
They lulled us into a sense of
false security.
False security, yeah. And these guys, and they're in cahoots. The Gutens are in cahoots with these people.
They could be.
They'll slide.
That's a fun word.
Yeah,
I know.
They'll be amongst the drones.
They'll be in cahoots with their shenanigans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cahooting shenanigans.
Amazing.
I tried to make it into a verb. It didn't work. Or an adjective. No, what's an action? An action word. What is that?
Verb.
A verb.
Okay, all right.
Verb, that's what's happening.
All right. So again, April 5th.
Thank you, Schoolhouse Rock.
April 5th, if you look up in the sky and see a bunch of lights that look like UFOs, they're probably not. They're probably just your local drone enthusiasts with their LED lights.
Don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, and then the Gutens will
a little invasion.
The Gutens will swoop in and kill us all after that.
Aren't you a ray of sunshine? Oh, pretty lights. We're dead. Ha-ha!
We're doomed. All right. We would love to know what your thoughts are on this story or the other stories that we talked about tonight. Leave us feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or our voicemail number. You can call it anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, and leave your comment about any stuff that we talk about on this here show. Let's move on to this.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
All righty, Anessa, what you got? What'd you pick for this week's Creature Feature?
I picked the Caxians.
They sound pretty nefarious.
Yeah. Actually, no. They're some of our best friends. Caxian are from the planet Cax, and they look like dogs.
Aw, cute.
I know, they're adorable. So they left Cax 1,000 dog lives ago, which I'm not entirely sure how long a dog life is. If it's, 21 years or something? I don't know. 7 years for every human year? I don't know if that's what they're using as dog life. But anyway, they left Cax 1,000 dog lives ago to head to Earth to mine Jex, which I never really found out what Jex was. But they chose Earth because of the fact that we have dogs here, and dogs are very similar to their species or their race. The original plan was each Caxian was only supposed to stay on Earth for 5 lives, because apparently they can not necessarily regenerate, but they come back. I guess they reincarnate. And then they're supposed to head home with each Jex shipment. And they have limitless lifespans. Caxian creatures are larger dog breeds. So think German Shepherds, Huskies,
Saint Bernard,
Great Danes, Saint Bernards, like the big dogs.
Big dogs. Woof, woof.
Big dogs. And they even classify an English Bulldog, which I always thought of more of a medium, but I guess it's like Husky dog. It's built. And they've been here so long that there's hardly any full-blooded Caxians left here on Earth. They speak Caxian, but they also have a code language called Kanks. And it's to be discreet around another alien race here on Earth called the Neeks, nobody really cares about them.
We are the aliens.
The Neeks are actually the smaller breed dogs. So if you think of like Chihuahuas and Shih Tzus and Pugs, they're the small yappy
dogs. They're the worst.
Yeah, and the main careers that the Caxians have are defenders and miners. So you've got the people defending the mines and whatnot, and then you've got the people that are actually mining. What's interesting and kind of gross is they eat Jex in order to carry it to their destination, and then they poop it out. And then they load it onto the spaceship, and then they blast off into space.
So someplace on Earth right now, there's some alien or some dog-looking aliens that are mining Kax. They're taking this stuff out of the ground.
They're mining Jex.
Or Jax, sorry.
And they're ingesting Jex so they can carry it from their mining tunnels to their spaceship, and then they poop it out and onto, I guess, like a loading thing, and then it gets loaded into the spaceship. So, yeah, because that's...
Where did this information come from? Where did you find out about these guys, Anessa?
Well, that's part of my pick. So, the Kax is used for a lot in this particular species. Kax also happens to be the name of their god, because they pray to Kax. Either that or they're praying to the planet, which I guess is possible. And in case you ever wondered, and I'm sure a lot of people figured this out, but, you know, dogs pee not necessarily to mark their territory, but it's a urinary tract messaging system to leave messages for others to let them know, hey, I just left here like 15 minutes ago. I will see you at the base. So.
Oh. Dragon swims the moat at midnight. Hang on, I got to pee that out here.
I am so looking forward to your pick, Anessa, to find out where these come from or where you got this information from. I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, I went ahead and put myself at the top of the list because I figured I would just go into the picks after that.
Okay, well, let's how about we just segue now? Let's segue from the creature feature into your pick. So tell us more.
More, please, sir. I want some more. So the Kaxians are from a short story. Actually, it's a series of stories, but I initially found it as a short story called Dog Aliens Kaxian Duty. And it's by Charisse Kelly.
Duty.
And the little synopsis that you find on Amazon says, our dogs lead secret lives while we're at work. At 3 months old, Clem faces his first day of Kaxian duty with anxiety. What will his assignment be? His tail has a mind of its own, which doesn't help matters any. And so yeah, there's this little puppy named Clem, and he lives at home with his doggy parents and his human. And he digs himself a hole underneath the fence each day, and he runs to fulfill his Kaxian duties, and then he comes home at the end of the day. And it's actually kind of cute just reading the interaction of the dogs and whatnot. Because, you know, you imagine, like, this little puppy, like, learning what he's supposed to do. And I was reading it, and then it was at the end of the short story that I discovered that this is a little book series. And I came across it on Amazon, which is wonderful. And, I ended up actually starting to read the first book in the series, which is Dog Aliens 1, and it's called Raffle's Name. And I had to actually start reading that so I could find out more about the Kaxian breed, because it doesn't go into too much detail. So, but yeah, it seems like a cute story to read, and I will probably continue reading it at some point, but I recommend it. Even if just checking out the short story and reading the adventures of Clem and his buddies mining Jex and pooping it out.
I have one technical issue, one technical question for you, Anessa. How do they... mine. I mean, they don't have, I mean, dogs don't have hands to grasp tools, right?
No, basically, like, dogs, they can dig. They use their paws. Oh, okay. They dig. And then they find the jacks, and then they ingest it. And basically, you have one dog at the front, and he's mining. And then you have a couple of other dogs behind him clearing out the dirt so it doesn't pile up behind the dog. So it's just like this assembly line of moving the dirt. And then once they've ingested as much as they can ingest, then they leave and then the next person comes and keeps digging. And the other person, or the other dog, I guess, runs to the spaceship, which they have ships in different areas. Part of the challenge is that they have to battle with the Neeks. Like I said, they're the small yappy dogs. And they try to steal the Jex that's already been mined from the Caxian creatures.
Now, is there interaction between the alien dogs and actual dogs on Earth?
There is, just because there's hardly any full-blooded Caxians on Earth, because they've kind of done it with Earth dogs.
So some dogs that somebody may have a dog that's not just a dog, that may be actually intelligent?
It might be partially Caxian.
An alien hybrid dog.
Yes.
All right.
But you can't really tell the difference, because they're so closely related and compatible. So, and yeah, it's funny because at one point they were mining the Jex and they had some Neeks that were coming after them, and the bulldog is carrying a large load and he's having a hard time running from the Neeks, and so he so Clem like distracts the Neeks and then meets the bulldog. I forget the name of the bulldog, and the bulldog poops out the Jex, and then the Clem eats the Jex and then continues onwards. And dogs do eat poop, so it makes total sense. Maybe they're just transporting Jex to another destination.
I think we're onto something. Definitely. That explains a lot, doesn't it?
It's just such a weird story, and in a way it's kind of cute the way it's written with the interactions between the dogs, except for the pooping and eating, but
yeah, but still that's a little bit, that's a little bit cute.
A
that's a little bit cute.
I'm sorry, what?
That's still a little bit cute. The pooping and the eating and the poop. Sort of.
No, I don't know. It's funny because at the beginning of the actual book it says,
they lick
your
face.
Good for kids to read, probably around 9 years old or so. And then they said younger kids would get it, but it's best if you read it out loud to them. But it's a fairly clean book beyond the poop eating, I assume. So it's good for kids. But I just thought it was kind of cute the way that it was written. But
okay. And that's one of the...
And it's free on Amazon. So
That's an awesome pick. Okay, cool. All right, so my pick is also a short story, and it was suggested last week by some feedback that we got about something that we talked about 2 weeks ago concerning aliens that could not believe in any kind of like higher power or God or remember that story? I think it was Anessa's story, right? You're the one that brought that to the show.
Yeah, it was Richard Dawkins saying that.
Oh, yeah, it was my story.
Yeah, yep. Okay. So last week you weren't here, Anessa, but we got some feedback from somebody suggesting this short story, which was concerning that, which dealt with that. And it's called The Star by Arthur C. Clarke, one of the most famous science fiction writers of all time. It was published in the science fiction magazine Infinity Science Fiction in 1955, won the Hugo Award a year later in 1956. So basically it's about a group of space explorers from Earth as they return from an expedition to a remote star system where they discovered the remnants of an advanced civilization destroyed when its sun went supernova. The group's chief astrophysicist, a Jesuit priest, is suffering from deep crisis of faith triggered by some undisclosed event during the journey. So basically, this civilization, they knew that their end was coming, and I think they had like 100 years or something like that. So what they did was they put the history of their civilization in this, like, vault on the planet farthest from their sun in their solar system, kind of like our Mercury. It was far enough away to be protected from the supernova. And our Earth explorers discover it, and they discover a deep mystery, and it really affects the Jesuit priest because he believes in God. And that's kind of cool how this theme has continued over three episodes now. And I found it for free online. I think I just did a Google search because I couldn't find a free version on Amazon, so I just did a Google search and I found a downloadable version of the short story. It's super short, too. I want to say maybe 10 pages at the most.
Yeah, because I know reading, was it the 1 billion names of God? Or it's a certain number, but it's written by Arthur C. Clarke. And that was maybe like 5 or 6 pages. So some of his short stories are like really super short.
Yeah. So if you have no time or you're not really a big reader, this, I would definitely recommend this. And it's got quite the plot twist at the end. I'm just saying. There's a lot more to it. There's a reason why this Jesuit priest is so upset over this. There's like a huge reason why.
No, I have to read it.
Yeah, no, I definitely recommend it. So that's my pick.
Cool.
All right. We're all short this week. Short stories and short films.
Yep. I went with a short film called Souvenir. And it is a really very well done short film. It's like just under 7 minutes. The imagery is very stunning. There's no speaking in it. That's one of the interesting things about it. It was done by director Mario Orman. And it's, like I said, it's just under 7 minutes. Beautiful look to it. The opening scene is the main characters looking out and seeing just utter devastation. And the ships that you see, and these are, they almost look like they're living ships. The pilot episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Encounter at Farpoint, the ship that keeps attacking Farpoint,
yeah,
that the ship looks similar to that.
Okay.
It looks like a sort of a squid-like ship. It's got like a kind of a center, like tail under the. It looks like a disc. Has tentacles that comes out from that, and sort of like this long tail that comes out from the bottom of it, and this person is standing there covered in soot and ash and obviously visibly shaken because he's witnessed this devastation. Things are on fire all around him. And when the camera kind of turns around, he's got a gun to his head.
Wow.
He's seen so much that he can't take it anymore. And a bright beam of light hits him, and his mini-adventure begins. It's very, like I said, there's no speaking parts to it at all. But it's very, the imagery is very, very powerful. And this short film was done on a very, very small budget. And you can tell that they used something like, you know, After Effects. I mean, there's been, you know, some kind of effect work that's been done you know, small, what seems like small scale, using something like Adobe After Effects or something like that, but it's very well done. And the ending to it is visually stunning, but very, it leaves you feel something that's somewhat confusing. It's the only way I can put that. It's well worth the watch. I lied. It's 6 minutes, 24 seconds.
See, if it would have been the original time, I would have watched it. I would have watched it, but you need to add some time to it.
But we'll have a link to the show notes, and you'll be able to see the film for yourself.
Where did you?
We'll also have links to the other books. But I just went to the internets and I said, "Alien short film," and just looked through some random stuff, and this one kind of piqued my interest.
Was it on YouTube or Vimeo or?
It's YouTube, okay. Actually.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. You know, there's some good stuff both on YouTube and Vimeo. Some great short filmmakers out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was remiss. I did not put the link in our show notes here that we use. So now it's there.
All right. And I will put what Brad just put there in our show notes of the podcast. See, it's a it's a whole relationship.
And you can watch it in HD. And you can, you know, expand your screen, watch it in HD. Well worth the watch. And like I said, it's a short. It's short. That's one of the other things I can say about it. So even if you're at work, you know, you got a little bit of time, the boss isn't looking, just fire it up and watch it.
And if you get,
you'll dig it.
If you get fired, blame Brad.
Send your copy of the Pink Slips to Galactic Netcasts. At galacticnetcasts.com.
Great thing about our picks this week, all of them, I believe, are free. You can get all of our picks for free. You don't have to spend a single dime or a nickel or a penny on our picks this week.
Exactly, because the short story that I picked is free. The first book in the series is free.
Brad's is free. Mine is free. It's all free.
Free! Yep.
He's good. And I gave the wrong email address even. It's galacticnetcasts@gmail.com.
I wasn't going to
correct you. Good Lord, what is wrong with me
today? I wasn't going to correct you. I was going to let you find that out, figure that out for yourself. You know, you're like a little kid. You got to learn for yourself. You got to learn your own mistakes.
At least I caught it, though.
Yes.
It's better than some people.
Minor redemption there.
Yes.
Caught it.
Yes. All right, we are running super short, like... I can't believe we're only at 52 minutes right now. This is, like, very unusual for us. In fact, last week, our not including all the production on the both front and back end, we were exactly an hour last week, Brad. So we have to fill. I mean, we got to fill a little bit of time here. So how about we...
Do we have any feedback or anything?
Yeah. Thanks for asking, Anessa. We do have some feedback. Like that,
woohoo!
It seems like that was set up. Yeah.
I wonder.
So our feedback comes to us via Twitter this week, and it comes from DJ, a.k.a. at UK Gnome. That's UK GNOME on Twitter. And he says... I love listen to you guys. I think it's supposed to be I love to listen to you guys. Chat Doctor Who on the podcasts. I find myself tutting. I think that's a UK word because I have no idea.
Yes.
What
that
is. Well, that's just going.
It's like tisk tisk.
Oh, okay. And correcting you. I should have used the what's that when you use the sentence to figure out what a word means.
Context clues?
Yeah, context. Thank you. Should have used the context to figure out what that word meant.
It was either that or Blues Clues.
Blues Clues.
I have no idea. That's not my generation.
Steve was far better than Joe. All right, continue.
I find myself tutting and correcting you. LOL, you need a Brit. And I actually replied to him. I said, we can have you on. So I think the next time... The next time that we have a Doctor Who story to talk about, we will get DJ, a.k.a. UK Gnome, on the show.
Nice.
It's a matter of coordinating the time, because
depending
on where we are, 5 to 6 hours difference.
I know. I told him that, too. I'm like, you know, if you're prepared to stay up or get up really early.
So if he happens to be up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, good thing for us, it's... This is the first of two podcasts. So this is the earlier of our two podcasts that we do.
So, yes.
Yeah. So, thank you. Thank you for...
Well, it'd be interesting to know what we're getting wrong on Doctor Who.
I know.
I feel ashamed.
Yeah, what the hell could we be getting wrong? Because the last time I was thinking about this, I was rolling this over in my head. The last Doctor Who that we talked about was the possibility of Peter Capaldi being a one-off Doctor, a one-season Doctor. And what did we get wrong? Was our analysis of that wrong? Did we get the wrong information? Are we... It was from the mirror.
Yeah, we're not... Well, I mean, we're not in the thick of it. No yeah. pun intended. I can't... Anyways, was another show that Peter Capaldi did.
We're not in the UK. We're not amongst.
We're not immersed in that news and in the culture.
Yeah.
I mean, Doctor Who is so much a part of the culture of the UK, from what we see, at least our point of view here, that I could see us probably getting little bits and pieces wrong here and there, and we probably do need some schooling in the world of Who. So,
and I've wanted to get a Brit on one of our shows for the longest time. So I promise the next time.
Besides the one lady that I met my first morning in the UK, like they were all fairly nice. Because quick story. The first morning that I was actually there, like. After having spent the night in Exeter, we went to the cafeteria in the building next door because we were staying on the university. And I asked for a slice of ham, and the lady looked at me. She's like, it's not ham, it's bacon. Because it's thick cut, and it looks like ham, but apparently they slice their bacon really thick over there. And I panicked. And when it came time to ask for hash browns, I'm like, oh, God, do they say hash browns here? Do they refer to them as potatoes? So can I asked for a couple of potatoes. She's like, you mean hash browns? I'm like, yes, hash browns.
See, you got gun shy. You were.
I know. Like, I panicked. I'm like, potatoes. I'm like, they're still potatoes in little triangular shapes. So, yeah. But besides her, everyone was really nice.
I can't wait to talk to DJ because – just to get his perspective on that and more. So the next time we have a Doctor Who story, I will get in touch with him and arrange to have him on the show. If you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, just follow @Galactic, or just @reply, @GalacticNetCast. We're also on the Google Plus, the Facebook. You can subscribe to us by going to GalacticNetCasts.com, and there's a subscription tab there. And just go to iTunes. We're also there in the store. We're on Stitcher. We're all over the place. You can listen to us. You can get a hold of us. GalacticNetCast@gmail.com, 805-328-3966. And that's going to do it for this Alien Invasion number 99. The next time we do the show, we're going to be in the triple digits. That's pretty awesome.
Wow, that is really good. I'm really excited about that fact.
Well, I was thinking
we're gonna hit 100 shows.
I know. I was thinking the other day, maybe today or yesterday, that I can't believe it's been almost 3 years since we started this show. Almost 3 years. 3 years this fall. So, all right.
Man, that's
crazy. Because I came in on year two.
Yeah.
But we hadn't been doing it that long. We were still pretty early days there when you came in, Anessa.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what episode you came in at. It was around...
Because I know it would have been around...
40
Because I
or
filled
50?
In a couple of times for you in February, March, I think. Because I think March is when I started on the sci-fi film school.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't have the best memory in the world. And kind of
so I think it would have been in the 40s?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was looking through some stuff, and I maybe thought it was 40s? Around the 40s. Yep.
Okay. Maybe 50s.
All right. So if the listeners want to figure that out for us, just go back into the archives. And
you want to do research for us.
You want to research our show because we're too pathetic to remember. Come on. Yeah. Fill us in. We're obviously clueless.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Final thoughts, Brad.
Crap.
Every time, well, this is a regular feature on the show, Brad.
I know, and now I'm back to not having. Hey, it's starting to warm up now. We're gonna get in the 30s finally.
Whoa.
By the end of this week.
Holy crap!
Madness.
And Dave is gonna be stopping by my neck of the woods this weekend, and we're gonna get some coffee at the Starbucks.
The Starbucks, yeah.
Really?
Very excited about that. Yeah.
Oh, yes,
that's
ma'am.
Awesome. Yep. If only you were coming up like in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Through Chicago.
Yeah.
No, we'll get some pictures even, and as Dave is passing through, and
yes, because
we'll,
Pixar didn't happen.
So. Yes.
Okay, we're running late. Anessa, what's your final thought?
I finally had ravioli, and it was glorious.
That's going back to a show title.
Yep.
A couple of episodes.
Throwback. Throwback, right? No, callback. Callback.
It was the last, I think it was the last episode that I was on.
Yep,
so.
It was.
Yep, not last week, but the week before.
Yep.
All right. Glad you enjoyed it. Glad you guys tuned in this week. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks, everybody. Bye, Dave.
Bye,
Bruce. Good night.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.